We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to the show and happy holidays to everybody listening to this podcast. We're back after a couple weeks off and a lot of games have happened. Today, we are talking to Nick Llewellyn. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited to be here.
The Pelicans have had a really, really tough stretch as far as schedule goes. They are now, if you go look on ESPN's power rankings, they now have officially the second toughest schedule of any team in the entire NBA behind the Lakers. So I'm pretty happy so far that they're 14-13, considering the tough schedule they've been going against. You and I, though, want to talk about a couple specific players. You've been writing a bunch of stuff on the blog about some of these guys. So we want to talk about today. We're going to talk about Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis. But I think we're going to start with Drew. First off, I understand that some people on Twitter have suggestions for you of what we should do with Drew. So fire away. I'm sure they're all great suggestions.
So Drew Holiday, I don't think he causes as much controversy as someone like Marcus Thornton when he was on the team. But there is this thing that he's a very even-keel point guard. He plays both ends of the floor. And I think fans, especially casual fans, tend to look more at the offensive side of the ball. And Drew Holiday's just not going to blow you away the way that someone like Stephen Curry or Damian Lillard is. And that's one of the things I wrote, you know, it was kind of a post just about how good Drew Holiday's been this season. And one of my big points was, like, if you want to understand how good he is, you have to watch him play defense. Because he's just, I mean, he's a master. He's an absolute beast out there. But, you know, a lot of fans don't see that, and I've gotten suggestions ranging from let's bring him off the bench, let's let Tyreke Evans start at point guard. I kind of rage quit Twitter one night because someone suggested that we start Jimmer Fredette. and this is not an exaggeration. Jimmer Fredette went 0-for-4 that night and had a turnover, I think. Like, it was a really bad night for Jimmer, and somebody was like, that's the answer. Let's move in that direction. So
Right, because we should always put our end-of-our-bench guys in there over our phenomenal defensive point guard. So, I mean, anybody who watched the Oklahoma City game, unusually defensive players don't get, like, moments to shine that are so obvious.
Right.
But they were really just riding the Russell Westbrook train, which put Drew Holiday right out front and center. And when they didn't run picks to make Drew be, like, shift off and cover somebody else, because the Pelicans do like to switch their picks and let Drew take big guys, Drew was just flat out brilliant. I mean, that the last play of the game was just entirely 100%, you know, a perfect exhibit of how quick he
is. Yeah, and like, let's just be honest. If you haven't seen that last play of the game, that last 10 seconds, the GIF is online. It's everywhere. Like, pour yourself a glass of red wine and just watch that, because it is just gorgeous. Like, it is how defense is intended to be played, and it's one of my favorite things. Like, I've probably watched it 100 times since yesterday. And that's what Drew Holiday does. And I mean, if you go back to the last Oklahoma City game, I thought he was really good on Westbrook that night too. And I think that's something you have to really watch in context, because it doesn't always come through in the box score. I think that's just how defense is.
Yeah. And I mean, there's not, like, let's put it out there. There's no way you're going to stop any really competent scorer in the NBA. There's no way you can anticipate what a guy is going to do every time, or fight through every pick and you know, meet every switch properly. And I think Michael McNamara once, like last year, said it the best was, you know, a really good defensive player will make the right decision probably 7 out of 10 times out there. Mm-hmm. And a bad defensive player will probably do it 5 out of 10 times out there. And that's really all the difference there is between them. But Drew, I mean, his anticipation, he just keeps jumping in front of guys, cutting off exactly where they want to go. And it puts him just on a different level. And I've said this before, but, you know, if you're ranking point guards, a lot of people will, you know, go down the usual suspects. They'll have Chris Paul, Steph Curry, you know, Tony Parker, all these people. And if you asked, like, almost anyone, and I would even say if you went to, like, the True Hoop Network as a whole and asked all the bloggers who watch a lot of basketball where they would rank Drew Holiday among point guards, I would probably say he probably wouldn't be higher than 14 or 13. I that's just my gut feeling.
I think that's actually a little bit high, but sure.
Yeah, I would 100% take him in my top 10. And you can call me a homer, but while his offense isn't the most efficient in the world, his defense puts him, like, I would say he's one of the top 3 defensive point guards in the league. If you're talking guys who play a lot of minutes, like, there's always guys, like, you know, who come in for 15 minutes and just throw it all out there. But Drew plays 34 minutes, and at the end of games, he's still, like, rocking it on defense.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like, that's what he's all about is, I mean, that's what he's known for. He's got this amazing length. I think his footwork is really underrated. I say that all the time, just watching him follow guys. Like, he never turns his hips and just flat-out runs. Like, he keeps his base about him. But on the other end, like, sure, he might not be as efficient as other top point guards in the league, but one of the things I got at earlier this week is this season, he's been more efficient than he's ever been before. He's taken a lot fewer shots from the dumb zone. I think, like, this is off the top of my head, but just under half of his shots are either threes or within 3 feet of the basket. And he's not shooting as well from three, but his, like, true shooting percentage is higher because of that, right? So while he's not your ideal efficiency, or at least he's not the most efficient point guard in the league, that doesn't make him inefficient by any stretch. Like, I mean, I'm fine with what he does on the floor. And he gets people open, too. It's not easy to average, you know, 7 assists a game when we have, you know, at least one other guy that's going to be a primary ball handler. So I just couldn't be more pleased with Drew this season. And for me, it got to a point where I was like, how are other people not seeing this? Like, how is he not everyone's second favorite player?
Yeah. Yeah. So just flat out, I mean, I know we're loving on Drew Holiday, but if you had to build a team and you were told Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis are going to be on that team, do you need a second star or a third star for that team to be successful? What is your take there?
So you're asking me if Drew could be basically the second or the third best guy, like, what's his ceiling on a championship team?
Yep.
Do I get to choose the fourth guy?
No.
Okay.
Big three. That's what everybody wants is a big three.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, I think that if you told me you're going to have a top-heavy team and you're going to basically build around three guys, like, you know, Miami or whatever, to really compete for a championship and just survive the gauntlet of the Western Conference, I think, yeah, I'd probably want a guy in between AD and Drew. Okay. Kind of a second order. But if you told me, like, yeah, you can get a third and a fourth guy. So you get, you know, a guy that's just under Drew and then, like, a very competent player behind him. I think you can build a championship team where Drew's your second best player. And that's one thing I've been thinking a lot about lately, is that how you optimize these individual players is kind of a difficult task. And I guess especially difficult with someone like Drew, because even though he's not going to be the best player on a championship team, he is good at both defense and offense. So you get to kind of pick and choose what you want from him each night. And I think that versatility alone allows for you to, I guess, allows for the possibility of him being your second best player. But I think, no, if we're looking at just big threes, I do think that you would need somebody to be kind of in between him and AD. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm falling in the same place, which, you know, on this team, that might actually be an issue as constructed. We've got to find that second guy. You can build a team that's good all around. We've seen the Mavericks do it. We saw Portland have a team that almost went to the finals based on that model. But typically those teams have very big pockets and are willing to spend lots of money on the good guy who, you know, he costs $12 million a year. He's not a star, but he's still pretty good. I'm not sure we'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
But I absolutely think that they do need to find a second guy, but Jrue Holiday is definitely capable of being the third. You've brought up this before, but the howls of outrage when Jrue was traded for focus generally around one item.
Sure.
And so his turnover rate, I've noticed that, well, just this team in general, I think they're second in the league at turnover rate, like the second best.
Right.
So is Jrue all of those turnovers, or are we looking at, has he improved dramatically?
I don't think Jrue, I mean, I don't have the data in front of me, but Jrue is probably not committing all of the turnovers. That just doesn't seem reasonable. No, I mean, like when I wrote the Jrue Holiday's having his best season, I think he was at 11.9 as a turnover percent, which, so like turnovers per 100 plays, that's pretty good. And I think he's now, he's moved up because he's had a couple of bad games. Like when he was in Philadelphia, turnovers were a problem. And I don't think that you can really get around that, but I think his usage percentage was also pretty high because there weren't a lot of other creators on that team. And go ahead, sorry.
If you take a look at his numbers right now, among point guards who are actually playing more than half a game and have a usage rate higher than 20%, so that like removes guys like Avery Bradley, who's not really a point guard, he is fourth. His turnover percentage is the fourth lowest behind Kemba Walker, Chris Paul, Kyrie Irving. Oh, sorry, he's fifth. And Kyle Lowry's higher than him as well, too.
Right, and I did the same where I controlled for players that were getting 15 points a game and at least 7 assists, and there's like 8 point guards, and he was tied for second lowest turnovers per game with Chris Paul. So you're talking about guys who have a comparable workload that are turning the ball over more. I mean, you know, everyone raves about Steph Curry, and I've had people complain to me, like, that's the type of guy we need with AD. And Steph can have nights where he just, like, throws the ball away 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, you know, Jrue Holiday's not great, I mean, the worst he gets is, like, a 4 turnover night where he just forces 3 or 4 passes. Yeah. And usually we're losing pretty bad those nights anyway, so it doesn't matter.
And honestly, if I was building a team, while Steph Curry is probably one of the top 3 or 4 players I would go for right off the bat because of his age and everything. I would not put him next to Anthony Davis.
Really?
Quite frankly, I wouldn't. I would actually, if I was going for a point guard, I would go for one with a little bit more natural playmaking than natural scoring.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about what I would do if I put Steph Curry next to Anthony Davis, and I don't know how it would work, but I would just kind of hope that talent wins the day.
It's true. It's kind of stupid of me to say that because, you know, every shot Steph takes seems to go in. Dude is the sickest shooter I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's like, he could easily be the best shooter of all time. And I think if I were a coach, I'd be like, we'll figure it out. I mean, we'll just score the points and hope we're up at the end of the game.
Right.
But I do think there is this thing we need to talk about with Jrue kind of long-term, that it did seem like Dell really went after him aggressively. And I think that the team, that is kind of a proxy for how the team feels about Jrue. And I think that that is the point guard they want next to Anthony Davis. So I think that gives us a key not only into the quality of player that Jrue is, but how he can kind of go along with Anthony Davis in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, there are some things offensively that I wish Jrue did a little differently. He really, really does like to get into that mid-range area, and not less than mid-range, I would say, like the paint mid-range. And he's not very good from there.
Like that kind of like 10 to 16 foot area.
Yeah. And that, the thing is like people think that the closer you get to the basket, the better players are. And that's actually not true. If you go look, it's like if you get between like 0 and 5 feet from the basket, of course, great percentages. But the 5 to 10 range is the like death zone. It is the worst part of the mid-range. It's worse than a step inside the three-point line. And that's, of course, those are the guys who are trying to get to the basket and someone's cut them off.
Exactly.
So they're just flipping up something. And unless they're Tony Parker or Chris Paul, who have both mastered shots in that range to an extraordinary level, Drew doesn't have that yet. And there are some things for him to learn, but we just mentioned the fact that he used to be a turnover machine, and he now is not even close to that.
Right.
And he's 24. He's going to get better, and if there's anything you're going to learn, it's going to be able to learn like the hit shots like that.
Right, and that's, I think, so I'm looking at it right now, and this 3 to 10-foot area, he's taking 20% of his shots from there, so that's not great. And he's hitting 43%. And like, this is a common thing among all players, that when you're getting inside, you're trying to get within like 3 feet of the basket, the restricted area. Nobody wants to be 3 to 10 feet. That's just, you're getting cut off, like you said. But one thing I have enjoyed about his game is this season, that like 10 to 16 area, where he'll come off a pick. He doesn't take a lot of them. He only, like 17% of his shots come from here. But I've noticed he'll come off pick and rolls and kind of set up at like the elbow and force the defense to make a choice. And when they don't come to him, he'll hit that little mid-range shot. And he's hitting it like 48% of the time this season. Yeah. And I really love that, because a defense is obviously going to take away shots at the rim and shots from 3 points. So if you have a couple of guys who can hit those types of shots, you're a really good offense. And, you know, the Pelicans are a great offense this season. They're just an atrocious defense.
Yeah.
So we're at.
Yeah. And it is, the defense is unbelievably bad. And I am kind of flabbergasted with that. But we'll get to that a little bit more when we start talking about our next guy. And you also mentioned mid-range shooting. Having guys who can nail some mid-range is nice, because you will be forced into taking some of those shots. Anthony Davis, I mean, when he came out of college, I remember watching a game where he took like 8 mid-range jumpers and missed every single one of them, and a couple of them badly.
Yeah.
I never thought he would be a mid-range shooter. His first year in the NBA, when he was shooting like 35% from that area, I just kept cringing and saying, please, he's so good doing other things. Stop making him do this.
Yeah.
I need to eat my words. The guy is
sick. Oh, you really do. Do you know what his percentage from mid-range was his rookie year? I looked it up the other day.
I thought it was like around 33 to 35 somewhere.
Oh, it was like 29. Like it was down there. I mean, I'll look up the article later. I might be wrong, but it was way down there, because the next season he jumped up to 41. Mm-hmm. Which, for some comparison, LaMarcus Aldridge this year is shooting 41% from mid-range. So that's how big the improvement was from year 1 to year 2. And this season I think he's shooting like 48. Mm-hmm. So he has become an elite mid-range jump shooter, and it's you know, 'cause, I mean, tell me if I'm dumb for thinking this, but when he came on the team as a rookie, I thought in like 3 years' time, I was going to be saying, boy, he still has a lot to work on offense, but he's an amazing defender and makes a lot of high-energy plays on offense, but he's still not a good offensive player. And I feel like I'm almost saying the opposite, and that surprises me. Do you feel the same way, or is that just me?
I am 100% on board.
Okay.
Well, at least I'm not, but I will say this about Davis. I think he is unfamiliar and poor defensively when he is outside of the big man role. When he is forced to switch into a small forward, guarding a guy as a small forward or a guy as shooting guard, if the other team isn't so stupid that their guard immediately says, I got a big man on me and I'm going to dribble out to the three-point line and try to take Anthony Davis, which is perhaps the most comical thing in the world, because Davis snuffs that so often, it's crazy. If they just run their plays and he has to make decisions as a wing player, he is lost and doesn't know what to do, and he doesn't know his help, and it's bad. So there are moments when like this team does switch very freely on the wings, and Davis will happily switch with Evans when they're guarding somebody, and you think that's great, but sometimes Davis gets really lost if that's the case. And I'll be honest, I have never watched a player regularly with the offensive talent that Anthony Davis has since I was in Chicago and was watching Michael Jordan all the time. Like, Davis is the best offensive player I've watched a lot of since Jordan.
Yeah. My basketball knowledge doesn't go back that far, so I can't agree. I saw those games on ESPN Classic, but sure.
Right.
But I mean, that is kind of incredible because I thought he was going to be kind of an above-average talent on offense, an amazing defender. And just to kind of talk about his defense for a second, one thing that I've noticed is when teams try to, like, go one-on-one against Anthony Davis, I can almost see him breathe, a sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's his strong suit. Like, and it's not even that he's super good at individual defense, it's that he's an athletic freak. And you'll see this when he plays, like, older power forwards in the paint. They'll get around him, and they'll get a good shot, and then he'll just remind them, like, I have a 7'7 wingspan and an incredible vertical. I'm going to block your shot.
Right.
Like, he is not – he's an average individual defender, I would say. But his athleticism makes him look better than that just because he can make up for all the mistakes. Where I really see him struggle, like you said, outside of the paint, but also when he gets in these positions where he has to take keep an eye on his man but also an eye on the ball. And he'll rotate over – sometimes it's just a step late, which, you know, he's 21. Like, that's fine at this point. But there's other times where he could count to two or three before he realizes he should be in another space. And the farther away from the basket he is, the worse it gets. And part of me, like, gets frustrated and starts to worry, like, oh, he'll never figure this out. But we just mentioned Jrue Holiday's 24. I mean, he's 21. Like, mm-hmm. there's so much room for growth, and there's so much time. And, again, we've watched him improve so much offensively that I'm kind of inclined to believe he's going to get better. But it is kind of weird right now to watch somebody who – seems to have a lot of defense awareness, seems to be very athletic, but does struggle playing part of a team. And I don't know, man, it's an unfair, a little bit reductive, but that's just kind of how I see it in broad brushstrokes.
Yeah, and you know, there is a direct correlation to the fact that I think there was an article written, I want to say it's Kevin Pelton. It might have been Bradford Doolittle on ESPN.com, one of the insiders, where they basically did a weighted – age for all teams, not just like, because you see like what's the average age of a team, but you know, some teams their old guys play a lot, some teams their young guys play a lot. Well, the Pelicans are the second youngest team in the league, the youngest being Milwaukee. So like teams like even Orlando, which is rebuilding, and Philadelphia, which is rebuilding, are somehow older than this team minutes wise. So there is, I'm 100% convinced that there is a correlation between age and defensive ability, like efficiencies ratings. They get better as they get older. They always do. But they're 26th. And
God, yeah.
You can only go so far. Like, so you can say that they're going to get a little bit better, but this is the thing I'm just having a horrible time wrapping my head around, which is this team starts Davis, Ashik, and Holiday. And they're 26. And what's even weirder is Davis and Ashik, they actually make this a pretty good defense. When they're on the floor, the team does fairly well defensively. So, I mean, and it's them combined. So I wish it was as easy as soon as Ashik leaves, the team is terrible
right.
defensively.
Yeah.
But if it's Ashik with Anderson, the team is terrible defensively. It has to be the two of them. But that means that the wing players are just god awful. I mean, that's the only way you can think of it. Like, we have god awful wing defenders, and it doesn't matter who we put out there. Like you were just telling me earlier today. So tell great people we have a solid defensive five. So tell them who they are and what their defensive rating is, so everybody can be impressed.
Right. Yeah. And let me give a little bit of context. So I was starting a post idea where I was just basically like, why aren't the Pelicans better at defense? That was the idea. Because like you said, we have Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis, Omer Sieg, and then we have like two or three guys that I think you can put out there and they won't drown on the defensive end. And for me, my idea before the season was like, if you have three good defenders and two average ones, you should be an average defense. You should be fine. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, like to test this theory, I want to look at a lineup that features probably our five best defenders at each position. You could probably replace Evans with Rivers if you want, I guess. But I looked at the lineup that had Ashik, Anthony Davis, Dante Cunningham, Jrue Holiday, and Tyreke Evans. So Cunningham hasn't been here very long. They've only played in six games together, 29 minutes. trust me, I understand small sample size. I write about it a lot. Having said that, their defensive rating right now is 126. That
which is
just
awful.
Like, it's indescribably awful. That's amazingly high.
Right. So that means that if you gave an opponent 100 possessions, they'd score 106 points less.
Right. And to give a little bit more context, when you're thinking about, like, offensive rating, the difference between, like, a 104 and a 107 is huge. It's the difference between being, like, you know, maybe average to being one of the top five teams in the league. So we are so far away with this best lineup in terms of defensive talent from being even close to manageable, right? Like, it's just shockingly bad. And I think we're 26th or 27th right now in total defensive rating. So even as a team, not looking at just individual lineups, we're really bad. It's not even like we're close to average. We can't see average from where we're at.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's getting a little bit hard to explain at this point.
Although, let me ask you one thing, and this is, I wonder how much this matters. If you look at our schedule, we're now played 27 games. Do you know how many games we've played against bottom 10 offensives in the league so far?
Wait, do you know, or do you just?
I do know.
So
I just want you to take a guess.
I'm going to guess 7?
6.
Oh, so close.
Only 6 times all season have we played a bottom 10 offense.
Oh, my God.
And 2 of those were Oklahoma City.
Sure. Which, like, but both the times we played them, they weren't bottom 10 offenses. They had Westbrook and Graham back for one of the games. So
correct.
It's really 4.
So, right. So it's our schedule, like, how do you look at that schedule and not just like holy cow, like, this team has really played against, it's possible, you know, because you said it too, like, if you improve our defensive rating by, say, 2 points, because suddenly we'll be able to play some offenses that aren't insanely good, you know, that takes us from 26 probably to, like, 17th.
Right, yeah.
But am I just being optimistic here? I mean, we do have to play 52 games against the Western Conference. And
yeah, it is one of, like, I think it'll improve in January because that's a great schedule for us. I don't know what the, like, scheduling offense has against the Pelicans in December, but we always have a bad December.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that's what's nice is, like, we're actually holding our own. Like, people are focusing on the Portland destruction. And there have been some bad games in here, but they are playing 500 ball against a really difficult slate of people.
And, like, and I know it's a little bit more macro than we intended to go, but going into December, I remember looking at the schedule and I was like, oh, we could end this month with, like, 11 wins. That was totally in the feasible set of outcomes. Like, the fact that we're 14 and 13 right now to me is fantastic. I couldn't be more excited because we beat Oklahoma City twice when they had at least Westbrook. We beat Houston. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are not games that I think you look at and just guarantee a win. And so we've been playing really good basketball, but it hasn't really helped our defensive numbers yet, I guess.
Just staring at this, by the way, this just another fact that just boggles my mind. The Western Conference, the only teams in the bottom 10 offensively are Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and Houston.
Houston, really? Hmm.
Yeah, they're 21st. And that's probably because Dwight's been out, which, of course, we got them when Dwight was back.
Right, because we're, like, thanks just very that much. Lucky.
So it's just, oh, wow.
The Lakers aren't even in the bottom 10?
What's that?
The Lakers aren't even in the bottom 10 at all?
No, Lakers are tied for 15th with the Sacramento Kings. That's how crappy Eastern Conference is. Like, it's Philadelphia, Indiana, Detroit, Orlando, Charlotte, Brooklyn, New York. Those fell out the bottom 10.
Oh, my God. Like, and I don't watch as much Eastern Conference as the Western Conference, obviously, because I'm a Pelicans fan. But what is going on over there that the Lakers make it to average in offensive efficiency of all things?
Mm-hmm.
Come on, Detroit. Just anybody. Get it together.
Yeah, so I should throw this at you just really quick. Josh Smith?
Yeah, I was.
Would you like Josh Smith?
I was a part of that on Twitter. I tweeted out, I think at 5 o'clock today, that I had seen bloggers and fans suggest 29 teams for Josh Smith to go to. I've yet to see the re-sign with Detroit. That's the only one I haven't seen. But apparently he would work on anyone's team, despite the fact that there was no trade market for him. It was better for them to waive him and take a 5-year cap hit. But sure, I think he's a perfect fit for all 29 teams.
So I would be, if he gets signed by the Pelicans, I would probably spill my intestines on the floor.
I think it would be like, it would be like one of those nightmares in a sitcom where we tell you that we signed Rudy Gay and you're like, no, I'm like, just kidding. It was Josh Smith. It's infinitely worse for you.
Yeah. Cause Rudy Gay actually apparently learned how to play a little basketball over the past 2 years.
Sure. And that's what people were telling me on Twitter. They're like, yeah, but he could figure it out. And I was like, I mean, I would buy that if he were 23, but he's been playing basketball for like 10 years and still just not good at it. So,
yeah, and even worse is like the only possible position you can play him at is power forward. And there is no possible minutes at power forward on the
right.
team. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and, like, and again, this is another thing that just fascinates me. We've seen for like 4 years we talked about how Josh Smith can't play small forward. And as soon as he's released, everyone's like, well, why doesn't Dallas just sign him and play him as a backup small forward? It's like, why are we doing this to ourselves? This is, right. This is such an old conversation, but...
Honestly, he would be scary in Houston.
Yeah, no, that actually would be pretty unfortunate.
Because you put Dwight Howard and Josh Smith next to each other, and you may have just created the most unlikable front court of all time. But they're going to be scary.
Yeah, I think Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard have something to say about most unlikable front court. But
that's true. And I bet
they're a power couple for sure.
I bet if we went back and looked at some other teams, we could come up with some much more unlikable front courts than that. Like, I could think of any front court that had Antoine Walker in it would probably drive me nuts. It doesn't matter if the center is Antoine Walker. And
anyone else. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't matter. At that point, you know. And I go back to his class. He shot like 28% from 3-1 season, and somebody asked him, so why do you take so many threes? And he said, because they don't let us take fours.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
The NBA is fantastic.
So, all right. So what is your theory about this defense? Do you have one?
I have.
We just have to sit here and study it? I mean, I can't figure out why they're this bad other than I'm hoping it's this fact that we're just going against the murderer's row of offense.
Sure. I mean, I don't think I should call them theories. I have poorly cobbled together ideas.
Okay.
So, like, the one thing I kind of am throwing out is the idea that it's just a lack of talent because, again, we have a few guys that can play defense. And between Omer Asik and Jrue Holiday, like, that's two levels of defense. You know, you've got a guy from the point of attack, you have a guy in the basket. The other three people should just be able to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
I think one argument that I would give a little bit of credence to is continuity. I don't really like talking about it because it's kind of the buzzword this season. Everyone's talking about these teams that have been together for 3 or 4 years and how that's making them all so much better. But the reality is Jrue Holiday's played, I think, now 61 games as a Pelican. Dante Cunningham is a big player in the rotation, and especially on defense, and he's played, like, I don't know, 7 games maybe.
Yeah.
And so when guys are missing time or guys are new, you're not getting a lot of playing time together. And for me, just the way I watch defense, individual defense is great, but with as much ball movement as going on in the NBA right now, it really is something that a team has to do collectively. So I do think there's something to be said for just playing together and having a because I was watching a play the other night where Jrue Holiday basically gave his man the lane, and I was like, that's really out of character. Jrue Holiday stays in front of people really well, and I looked back and I rewound it or whatever, and he was looking over his shoulder and expected Anthony Davis to cut behind him and close off this guy's lane to basically rotate over, and it didn't happen. Hmm. And so that's not that either one of these guys are bad defenders, it's that there was a communication error there. So I'm kind of giving some credence to that idea that maybe it's continuity and maybe with a little bit more time and a much weaker schedule in January, we'll get it together. But I'm a little bit stumped. I mean, I think AD individually has room to grow, and when he reaches his peak, we'll be a better defense. But it's a little bit hard to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's one last thing I wanted to throw at you and see if you could figure – if you have a theory on this as well. This is me – I was just going through lineups trying to figure out what lineups are actually good defensively.
No.
There's so many that are good offensively, but I'm just like, all right, there's got to be a good defensive lineup out there. We got to have one – that's at least adequate and has played enough minutes where I can't just look at it and say, well, yeah, 2 minutes, it doesn't matter. So one of our best defensive lineups also happens to be what we thought our starting lineup would be all season long.
Oh, really?
Which was a little bit surprising to me. I didn't think adding Eric Gordon to a lineup would improve it defensively. Especially when, like, you look at last year when he had one of the worst defensive ratings of any guard in the history of, you know, ever, which is a bit of an exaggeration. He was just bad for last year. But I prefer to always use hyperbole when I'm talking Eric Gordon.
I think it's like a state lull.
That's right. If you're talking about Eric Gordon, hate.
Yeah, worst ever has to be included in the sentence.
That's correct. But the team actually has a better than average, which for this team is saying something, a better than average defensive rating when it's Eric Gordon, Tyreek Evans, Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis, and Omer Asik. And as soon as you take one, and I check this, you take any of those one players. So if you look at a lineup where Gordon's replaced with Rivers, or you look at one where Drew's replaced with Rivers, or either Asik or Davis are replaced with Anderson, defense bottoms. Is it just the fact that those five guys are all decently intelligent basketball players and athletic enough to cover for one another? Is that really all it might be? We just don't have enough physical talent on the bench behind our five? We're that top heavy?
Oh, man. I don't know if I can make sense of this. I mean, because I really wouldn't think that'd be our best defense because – like, the wing defense just doesn't seem to be there for me. Like, I think that Evans is a fine defender. I don't really have a lot of negative things to say about him. I think when he's off the ball, he's pretty bad, but on ball, whatever. And Eric Gordon adding him to the lineup, that just doesn't – I don't know. I really can't make sense of that. I mean, because it's also like we don't even have size with that lineup. You can't even say, like, oh, well, it's hard to get around these guys on the perimeter. Eric Gordon's 6'4", and going against shooting guards, so – I mean, yeah, sure. If I had to choose an explanation, let's go with they're all just smart, intelligent basketball players that can't run a fast break. That seems reasonable. I don't know. I mean, are you not, like, because I am a big believer, like, it's you know, like, the work I do personally is a lot of data analysis and math, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
I can't do that with defense, and I am struggling to understand it. Even when I watch it, it doesn't make sense to me how this team is so bad. And the fact that you're telling me the team with Eric Gordon and Tyreek Evans and Jrue Holiday in that lineup is the best, I have no intelligent explanation for it. And I'm not embarrassed to say that. Do you have anything besides what I said?
I really just do believe that those are the guys who've been running it in practice. So they know what they're supposed to be doing.
So you're kind of going with this continuity argument that they've got a little bit more experience together. Yeah, I think that has to be the best explanation I have for why we're all so bad, is that we have so many new pieces and with guys being injured last year that maybe it just gets better with time. That's the only way I can understand defense. And I think that, again, you play as a collective unit on defense. Like, that just to me has to be an explanation.
So, by the way, as a bit of comic relief, if you look at all lineups, five-man lineups that have at least 20 minutes played together and three games, like do you know what is the worst defensive rating amongst all of them? Your hand-picked defensive line. Jrue Holiday, Tyreek Evans, Dante Cunningham, Anthony Davis, and Omer Asik is the worst defensive. Now, it also happens to be the second best offensively as well.
Which, that doesn't make sense almost. Because I remember I saw that, like, the net rating, I think, is only like a negative one or something, because it's like 125 offensive rating. And I was like, well, that's not right, because two mid-range jump shooters and Asik is just a black hole. Why does this make any sense?
See, this is the dark world of lineup data, where you half the time you just gotta shrug.
I mean, there's like, I think because we can do this stuff now, we want to put a lot of weight on it. But to me, there's so much noise, because if DC is still on the floor, who knows who he's going against? Like, maybe he's in there to play. Like, against the Kevin Durant types for, like, 5 or 6 minutes, you know? So I mean, who knows what's really going on here? You need so much more context to really understand these numbers. And without that context, I'm a firm believer that it's impossible to understand them because none of that makes sense to me.
Right. I will say this, okay? most of these lineups have no more – don't even have a full game together.
Yeah, there's a couple with 1 minute because it was like a free throw thing.
Right. So I've actually – whenever I look at these things, I try to say more than 20 minutes together, but even that's kind of silly. Like – if you just limited it the lineups to groups that have played together for 48 minutes or more, you only end up with four lineups. That's it. There's only been four lineups on the floor that much. And by far and away, the best lineup is our original starting five of Jrue Holiday, Eric Gordon, Tyreke Evans, Anthony Davis, Omer Sheik. They have a 110.2 offensive rating and a 98.3 defensive rating. And if that was what the team's numbers were, they would be in the top 10 offensively, or top 5 offensively, and in the I think, 11th or 12th defensively.
Right, and again, to show how malleable this data is, Eric Gordon did kind of go out before we hit the very rough stretch of December, so mm-hmm. who knows what we'd be saying if he were still playing right now about that lineup. So...
Well, also, Eric Gordon was finally figuring out how to play basketball again when he went out.
Exactly, too. That, yeah, he was on an uptick in a big way because the start of the season was pretty rough.
There's not really any way he could be anywhere but going up at that point.
Yeah, I think that was the confidence he had to have. It's like, well, I'm not going to miss any more than I already have. But I do think that there's so much context in these lineup stats that I really only look at usually like our top four, which – once you get out of like the top four, you're looking at like 42 minutes played, 40 minutes played for these five-man lineups. There's just not a lot you could say about that because if you think about my handpicked lineup, if we have another game where they play 6 minutes but they go on like a 12-0 run or whatever, that's going to really shift those numbers. And yep. and that's just how fragile they are. And I'm not even sure if I would feel comfortable looking at them at the end of a season just because there's so much noise going on. So I'll stick to numbers that make more sense to me.
Yeah, I'm willing to take the, you know, to look at them and actually put some weight behind them if we're talking hundreds of minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you yeah. start, some of these little effects that we're talking about start to go away because you've just got so many games. And usually those are like your starting lineups or your finishing five that are playing.
Absolutely.
That if you're playing like 180 minutes, 27 games in the season with the lineup, that's a lineup you like a lot.
Right, and last year, after the season was over, the Pelicans had 9 lineups that played more than 100 minutes together.
Right.
So, I mean, now last year had a bunch of injuries, which is probably why. But even like if you go look at like the San Antonio Spurs, you're basically looking at Spurs is a bad choice because they shift people in and out. But you look at a team that played like a group of guys together a lot and didn't have a ton of injuries, they had to shift people in. You're only going to get like at most like 10 different lineups where you get a significant amount of time together. So,
right. Yeah.
So anyways, we got a game tomorrow night coming up here. I'm going to ambush you.
I'm so unprepared.
You probably don't even know who we're playing. Do you know who
we're
playing?
Yeah, Indiana, right?
Okay. We're playing Indiana Pacers who are 9-19. Our good buddy David West is back for the Pacers and playing. So, let's hear your prediction.
My prediction. So Indiana, 9-19. Clearly, I'm reading off of ESPN.com. Actually, I was thinking about this earlier because
are you just going to read the preview for me?
Yeah. I did click on the preview and I was like, this is just about Anthony Davis winning MVP. This is not helpful because what else are you going to talk about with this game?
That's right.
But they have been surprisingly good. Didn't they beat Dallas at some point with like no one from their starting five? From
yep,
last season,
they had a few games where they surprised
right,
people.
And they're 9-19. I mean, I think So we're playing in Indiana. I still expect a win. I mean, I'm going to go Pelicans by 6.
Okay.
And having said that, I'm terrible at predictions, but I think this is a Pelicans win. I mean, David West. I know he's had like a couple of good games, but he's still not really back in any way. Like he Yeah, like there's a couple of – I think he's not even shooting that well, right? Yeah, he's averaging like 13 points a game. So that's the only guy on that team that really scares me, and I don't think he's got it quite back together yet. So I think Pelicans got this one.
So honestly, David West is the last person who scares me on this team.
Oh, really?
Because I remember watching David West get snuffed by, like, Lamar Odom.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And, like, he had just a problem with lengthy power forwards. Like, they used to switch Kevin Durant onto him, and Durant would snuff him.
So are you going to pick Davis Sloan? Like, I mean, he's their leading scorer at 12.8 points a game.
This is a team that I just can't be scared of anybody on the team. There's nobody on this team that makes any sense to be frightened of. I'm sorry.
No, there really isn't.
I mean, like, what is the Pelicans' number one weakness right now? It's the fact that they can't really guard three-point shooting
exactly.
teams at all. CJ Watson, he's their best three-point shooter. I guess AJ Price, is AJ Price even with them?
Yeah.
I think he went back.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think AJ Price went back to Cleveland.
Yeah, he got traded to Cleveland.
So CJ Watson is the only guy who's even shooting better than average as a three-point shooter for this team.
Yeah, Donald Sloan's only at 34%, so I guess you're not. But he is taking more three-point attempts than CJ Watson, who's taking three a game.
The craziest thing about this team is they actually have among the starters, guys who have actually started games. They only have two people who currently sport a better than average PER.
Yeah, I mean, there's just not a lot of talent on this team. Like, there's a lot of ways to say that. There's a
that
ton of
brutal.
Point guards. And I guess the reason I picked David West, to like the guy who scares me, is because if I had to pick someone, I don't know. I'm a big believer in bad luck, I guess. And it just seems like he would have like a 30-point throwback game. And just embarrass Anthony Davis because we're that unlucky. But there is nothing else on this roster that's that intimidating. Scola, he's still playing basketball.
He can shoot mid-range jumpers at some games.
Yeah, 9-point average per game. That's great.
Oh, he could whip his hair back and forth and hit Anthony Davis in the eyeball and take him out.
Or he could, yeah. Or what was your theory about Omer Asik growing his hair out to draw a lot of fouls? Maybe we get into foul trouble because Scola starts flopping and whipping his hair.
It's true.
He needs
to have that song.
We are building an incredible game plan for the Indiana Pacers. It's based around a 34-year-old power forward flopping.
All right, so I am also picking the Pelicans to win this game. I'm going as high as 12 points. They should just take this team apart. But, you know, I've been disappointed in the past.
Yeah, I think
so I probably just doomed
them. I'm going to stick with my 6 points.
So we will be back next week with another podcast. I hope everybody enjoyed this one and have a nice holiday. I hope everyone has a good time and gets to see all their family.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon. Versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.